Hey, is that noisy? Gosh. Deacons need to meet in my office afterwards, please. This is your last chance after class to update the snow list, the list that we use to call if for any reason we have a class cancellation. You will be notified. That's one way we notify you. So if you need to add, change, or anything, it's out on the bulletin board. And finally, with regard to our schedule for the next couple weeks, the holiday season, we will have class on the 24th, which is Sunday. Of course, we'll have class this week, Tuesday, Wednesday. But starting that period, we will have class, our double session on Sunday, but not Tuesday, Wednesday of that week. Same thing for the first of the year. We'll have Bible class on the last day of 2017. And we will not have it Tuesday, Wednesday of that week. Okay? I will reannounce this as we move up to it so everybody can hear and know and plan accordingly. All right, let's implement the rebound adjustment if you need to and focus our attention on the aspect of SG3 that we refer to as the Stephanos. The Stephanos is the ultimate award. We've been doing some study on it in Philippians. It's quite a passage. It never impacted me nearly like it did this time going through it. So for me, it was the thing taught was really, really some good food for the soul regarding Paul's attitude towards this thing that he gradually builds up to and doesn't drop what it is until he gets to verse 14 there in Philippians 3. He keeps referring to it without defining it. And that he was still striving, and he uses this tentative language that I don't have it made. And none of us do. We don't have that secured yet. Now we generally understood that, and we knew from all of our teaching that there are a series of rules and things that you need to comply with in order to cross that line. And of course, a believer will have some questions about, well, can this person get it now? Considering, yes, if they do the following. So anyway, one thing you can't afford to do, shoot yourself in both feet, and that is to rise up against the teaching here at Maranatha Church and call it false. And what you have, I'm not talking about general reversionism. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about opening your mouth and saying this isn't right. Now you have to be careful because people can make misapplications, and we don't want to conclude that that's what they've done, or they can even say something stupid. That doesn't necessarily wrong-headed. That doesn't mean that they're in that category. We're talking about people who have, let's say, for instance, you have an example of someone who rises up and just attacks the doctrine of rebound. That's one attacks it. That person, these people are what I call the no second chance. They're not going to repent of that, and they're not going to come around. Yes, you can be fooled by somebody. Somebody can snow you and get you to believing that, well, maybe salvation isn't just by faith, and maybe there's something really gross and stupid you get yourself sucked into. Because we have these churches in the Bible, like the Galatians and so forth. They got sucked into this stuff. That's different. It's a horse of a different color. We're talking about full-blown, this isn't the truth. Those people will not come back. You can write them off. They're mentioned in Hebrews 6. So it is a limited group. It is a narrowly defined group of people. They won't, you know, I don't believe the Bible is the Word of God. I don't believe that it's inerrant. I don't believe, you know, those are big statements of, I just dumped the whole thing overboard. That's pretty much they've sealed their own deal and they're going to move on to the rest of their life in that mode. And since I am a pastor and I'm supposed to shepherd people, you know, up here, to reassure you, if someone from Maranatha, you see, it's one thing for somebody like, you know, I've talked about out there saying crazy stuff. You've got people that's left the church. You may still have some contact with them saying crazy stuff. That's not in my fellowship sphere anymore. You know, if you want to badmouth this and badmouth the church and all this stuff, you know, I'm not listening to you. I don't care how you're related to me. But for those of you who have people over time, maybe that are here in the church and saying, well, I don't agree with this and I don't like that, and some outstanding, you know, our relationship just died in the water. You know, the day you might come out of this, that's different. But our relationship's over. Go your own way. Go do your own thing. Since you've espoused this in my face. Because they'll say things to you they won't say to me. Thinking you're some dummy, they'll just fall for it. Because they're screwed up. They've got themselves in this position. So, when you run into that, that's the doctrine of separation is implemented. I don't mean treat anyone bad. I don't like that. It's just doctrine of separation. That's it. I mean, if you had close fellowship with someone and all of a sudden they're starting to espouse weird stuff. Now, I've had people say things that contradicted what I taught to me and apologized later. Right the next day. They apologized. They knew they were wrong. They got some DD for it maybe. And they figured it out. And that's cool. That's to your credit. But I've had people that, you know, and these people can carry this on their heads. A believer is under some situation in life and it goes to somebody who's a spiritual leader like a deacon. Nothing recent that I know of. Nothing recent. And say, you know, I got a good chance of getting a job over here in this other place. But what I hear from the pulpit is that we're supposed to hang in there with our right pastor and our right church to the end. What do you think I ought to do? What the person, and this happened more than once, it was different people, but what this person was doing was going to a spiritual leader rather than coming to me. That's fine. Take it off me. That's fine. But and they could ask any of you. They don't have to ask a deacon, but they could ask anybody. But they happen to go to a spiritual leader, someone that we have confidence in and we put in a position of responsibility and example and all the business. And they go to them and they say, well, you know, Jack, he kind of shoots with shoots out stuff like that. And I think you ought to do what's best for your family. Well, that would be, and this one person told me about this later. One person said, it was like I was hitting the solar plexus. I went out of that guy's office so discouraged. Well, if that happens to you, and you're hearing something diametrically the opposite of what is taught here, you stick with what you've heard here. You just had a bad moment with somebody. It's a test that you can overcome it. And put it aside and move forward. That's what you do when you hear this. Now again, we have to be careful. There are people here at different levels of spiritual growth. They've still got some junk in their soul that they've got to dump. And we can kind of understand that. But when it's so blatant and so the opposite, well, you don't need to be in church every time. Really. Don't go there. We're actually supposed to encourage people to be here, not pat them on the back and say, you're an exemption. You're exempt. You're different from the rest of us. Not through any physical circumstances. You're sick all the time or you're in kind of some situation. You know, we don't expect people to do things that they're incapable of doing, that they're absolutely physically incapable of. But we do expect people to put their doctrine where their mouth is. And that is all the more as you see the day approaching. I have to report the info. Forsake not the assembling of yourselves together, but all the more as you see the day approaching. So an individual may have things come up in their life where it could pull them away from that. They take a new job. What's this job entail? What impact does it have on Sundays and Tuesday, Wednesdays? And I understand if you're already in a situation, you got to work your way through that. And if you pray about it and God knows your heart and you want to do the right thing, He'll work it out for you. You'll get fired. Or they will say, we'll make other arrangements for you. We'll let you off those days. Because it's only a few hours a week, 4 or 5 hours getting here that I want free for, you know. Of course the cosmos doesn't know anything. They're not going to say, I admire you. No, they're going to say, isn't Sunday enough? You know, that's the way they think. So you're in the world, you got to deal with these things. And you got to see things if they come out and they start to become a threat to you spiritually. That's just one area. And God brings these things to your attention so you can address these issues. If you slough them off, yeah, I know, we all do from time to time. But eventually, there's a reckoning. There is a reckoning. You cannot persist in this. God doesn't just turn a blind eye, you're a child of God, run amok. There is a reckoning. There is a time when you have got to address this issue and deal with it. If it's detrimental to your spiritual life. It could be anything. Some addiction that you have. Addictions exist. There's an STA and then there's addictions. You got to deal with it. Well, I don't want to do it right now. Okay, fine. Continue forward with it. But there's going to come a reckoning. In some cases, it can be your health is trashed. Because you will not exercise moderation in an area that's legitimate, but you won't exercise moderation. There will be a reckoning. Now, if you pull your horns in now and get in fellowship, there may be a little pain associated with that. But there will be a reckoning if you do not address these issues. As your pastor, you'd think you'd look to me for spiritual counsel, which I try to do in the pulpit because that's part of my job in shepherding, is to bring things, because things are brought to my attention. I have to process them and know what's appropriate and not jump up here half-cocked and not have my ducks in a row. I mean, people have tried to push me in that area in the past. We got too many people that have a drinking problem in the church. Okay. Let me see. I'll try to process that. So I'll address it. And for those of you young people who party Saturday night until you're blind, and you can't make it Sunday morning. Is that what you tell your boss on Monday morning? You know, I just partied too hard last night again. Can you cut me some slack? Hell no, they won't cut you any slack. They'll cut you some slack. They'll give you the pink slip. So anyway, these are just things to consider. All of us need to shine the spotlight on ourselves. And one of the ways to get over these things is you go before God in prayer. As the psalmist said, I'm not aware of anything, but if there's any wrongful way in me that's detrimental, and I'm not talking about everyday incidental, I call it that. Doesn't sound good, but incidental everyday sinning. I'm talking about something that's really a big deal. And I need to know this so that I can adjust my course. There we go again. I can adjust my course. I'm running. I don't want to do something and be in something where I'm disqualified because it could lead to that. And yet we have all these, and that's why we have these believers as examples in the Bible. We use Isaac and Rachel as examples this morning. We use a lot of the rest of them. And examples of one who failed the grace of God in time, died the sin unto death, ironically, and God has this wicked sense of irony, she dies in childbirth. Not any other way. And she was going to give Benjamin some god-awful name. It would translate in the Hebrew, it means son of my sorrows. Oh, I'd love a name like that. Yeah, thank you. Jacob overruled it. He named him son of my right hand. Part of it was motivated because he thought he had lost Joseph forever. That's the misery Jacob went through a great part of his life. He thought Joseph was gone forever. It's inexcusable. I don't care if you've got 10 brothers, sons, lying through their teeth and telling you that a lion killed him, and here's his bloody tunic, multicolored tunic, and we're so sorry. A lion killed him, drug his body off, and we found this torn tunic, which they'd put goat's blood on. Huh. Oh, by the way, and these people are believers. Huh. And Jacob believed him. Instead of saying, you're all a bunch of liars. Every last one of you are lying. From the oldest to the youngest, you're all liars. You know why? Because Joseph had two dreams. He told you all about them. He had no control over them. It was divine dreams. And in these dreams, he said that your whole family will come and bow down before you. And he's the youngest. No chance of that. Oh, but where there's a God, when they came to Egypt to get grain, and they saw this high official that looked just like another Egyptian, but he was all in his garb and all of his finery, who was real stern with them. He knew who they were. He knew Hebrew. You could hear him talking. They didn't think he knew what he was saying. So he put him through this ringer. Understand the STA. I'm going to make you suffer. He shouldn't have done that. He didn't reveal himself right away. But they all come, and all these people are coming from around the world to Egypt because Egypt had all this granary that they'd saved up because of Joseph. But for this famine, they hit the whole Middle East. Everybody was suffering. Everybody was coming to Egypt to buy grain. Joseph interpreted the Pharaoh's dream of the dream where he saw seven fat, well conditioned head of cattle, and he saw seven skin and bones. What's this mean? I'm the Pharaoh. What's this mean? He got everybody could. Nobody could interpret it. And his wine guy, his cupbearer, said, well, when I was in prison, I met this young Asiatic. He was in prison with me. And we had a dream, and he interpreted our dreams. Me and the his pastry guy. And in the dream, the head of the pastry department, he would be taken to the gallows and hung, and I would be put back in my position. And he asked me to remember him when he came before you. But I didn't. But why don't we get him up here? You know what I like about the Pharaoh? He wasn't an arrogant jerk. If there's a source of information that can be helpful to me, I want it in here, and I want him now up here in front of me. They brought Joseph in. Out of his prison, he told Joseph his dream, and he says, this is simple. You're going to have 7 years of abundance in the grain crop of Egypt. And now all of Egypt's grain crop depended on the rise and fall of the Nile, not rain out of the sky. And that has to do with the rains down in Africa that fuels the Nile River that's almost 3,000 miles long. There was the saying, the Nile is the life of Egypt. No Nile, no Egypt. It'd be some big desert. And this thing would flood and it'd leave this rich soil along the sides, and they'd farm in that. And for 7 years, it's going to be exceptional. And then the Nile is just going to be comparatively a trickle for 7 years. Now, what can we do? We'll take that grain, and we'll put it in special facilities, and Joseph was behind all that. Pharaoh said, he is promoted to my right hand. He is over all Egypt. The only one who has more authority than him is me on the throne. But I give him carte blanche to run this whole country, this whole empire. And so these people were coming down from Canaan and elsewhere to get grain. They were dying up there. They were starving, you know, bread. And so the sons of Jacob went to Egypt. And there was Joseph. God's word will be proven true, even if a Jacob takes issue with it. None of us are above the word of God. And we can take issue with it, and people do it. They are going to experience shame because they weren't listening. And they didn't have the right information. And they're going to face that. Believers, obviously unbelievers. All right, the wreath is called by four names. These designations, the wreath of life in James 1:12 and Revelation 2:10, where it's mentioned twice in two different places as such. This one fellow the other day, he said this. Oh, he says there's four different crowns. Now, I don't have time to explain to you. There's only one that goes by all these different names. How's that? Why did you have to conclude there were four? I can't keep up with four. I can only keep up with one hat at a time. You know? So, I got one. And we'll call it by crown of life. Or wreath of life. Wreath of righteousness. Because you've got to maintain the righteousness code to get it. So, that's And of course, wreath of glory, because it's going to bring glory to the individual. You're going to be in the elite of the elite if you can get your mitts on this. Period. It's like if you're in a civilization, this is the summum bonum. This is the top. This is the best. Okay, we understand that. But this is going to be for all eternity. This isn't something you have now that everybody and then we all grow disinterested in. I don't know all the God's got all this hidden about what all that's going to do, because we're dealing with forever. And then it is the wreath of boasting or exaltation, indicating what those who receive it are going to be doing at the moment of their reception of it. They are going to be ecstatic in their resurrection bodies. Ecstatic. They're not going to just be, you know, thank you. It's in-your-face celebration. It is uninhibited by what anyone... Oh, you might hurt their feelings. Their feelings are hurt already. And that's their own doing. All those people that have their head... All those Christians will have their head... Will be in shame. You can't live your Christian life. I don't care how moral you are and all the human good you're into. You can't live your Christian life apart from sound doctrine. Out here telling people and all this stuff in churches today, and let's have a candlelight service and all this mess. They don't care. They don't care what the Christmas story is, so called. They don't care about the details. Oh, who cares about the details? We're just here to have fun. It's about us anyway, isn't it? We'll throw God in for those that throw God in. So, yeah, I slam that stuff. It's not of God. He isn't glorified. He isn't glorified by, you name it. He's glorified by what we do here. Whatever the topic happens to be. Now, one holiday season, I did the recalculated birth of Christ for you. It's a breakthrough. It's a breakthrough for me. It didn't come because of my own special study and insight. I got put onto it. I checked it all out. It fits. He was born on September the 11th, 3 B.C., the end of summer in Israel. Right at the end of summer before they go into fall. He was born on one Tishri in the Hebrew, on the Hebrew calendar, which is the day that they would inaugurate or crown a new king in the line. How fitting that he's born on that day, that civil New Year's of their calendar. And the only VIPs that visited the infant Jesus, there were some shepherds, peasants in the neighborhood, who got a special choir presentation to show up at the birth. But the Magi did not show up. These were advisors to kings. They were intellectuals. They studied these things, the stars and the movement and the so forth and the constellations, and interpreted these things rightly. I think they probably also had privy to the book of Daniel, because they're positive believers. We call them today Iranians. They're Persians. They traveled 500 miles on camels bringing gifts, and Jesus was 15 months old when they showed up. They didn't show up at the manger. They came, and you can just read it in the Gospels. There's no difficulty. The parents had been forbidden from, because they had to go to Bethlehem, because that's where you had to go to the town of your native birth in order to do the Roman census. How's about that? God's working. Even the Roman system works here for this. And because he wanted Jesus to be born in Bethlehem, because there was a prophecy to be born in Bethlehem. Wasn't good enough for him to be born in any other town. Because the prophet Micah, hundreds and hundreds of years before, said that the Messiah would be in one of the least towns born. That's so appropriate. Not in the big flashy Jerusalem or one of these other communities where you can go, I was born in Jerusalem and blah, blah, blah. Like people like to do. Where are you from? And if it's someplace famous or it's significant, they like. But they get it, you know, it makes them feel good. But I learned from the Word of God that the little things God's impressed with, I'm going to bring the Messiah up. And he's going to step on this earth in his humanity in a little town south of Jerusalem, about 10 miles. It's just a spot on the road. That's where he's going to be. The family was there because you had to go there to do the Roman census and sign this thing. And there was no room in the inn, and I suppose somebody's crying today. They didn't have any place for Jesus. You know, just crazy stuff. So he was born in a manger, because it wasn't like they had a Ramada Inn and a so-and-so ate and all these along the road. If they had an inn, it was nothing. It was taken over by all these people coming in to do the census. So it wasn't like anybody's being rude to Jesus. No place for him in the inn. And we've got these sermons and these dummies running around. It's fine. So I was born in a barn. You know? In a manger. Fresh hay. So who cares? Born in the back of a taxi cab. Where were people born? It doesn't matter. And so the Magi came 15 months later, because the angel appeared. He's directing the Holy Family, see, saying, look, don't go back. Don't stay here. You cannot stay in Bethlehem. Because, you know, Joseph and Mary had to have a certain level of spiritual understanding that they don't just have another baby. She wasn't impregnated by Joseph. She was impregnated by the Holy Spirit. And we have this baby, and we have in our hands that you're nursing, that you're taking care of like you would a regular baby. You got the Messiah. You got God in the nursery cradle. And every day, you're looking at the God-man. Can you imagine that? The Magi knew who he was. And they came 500 miles bearing gifts. And I don't know if there was three of them. There's more than one. This is a plural. I don't know how many there were. But let's just say it's three. Who cares? There's three gifts, so there got to be three Magi, of course. Okay, fine. Yeah. So they show up and they worship a baby. A child that is 1.5. One year and 5 months. Almost a year and a half old. They're worshiping a baby. They are, and these guys are, as I said, the Magi were advisors to kings in Persia, which we call Iran, and the Bible calls Persia. It calls it, even in the end time prophecies, it calls it Persia. So the only VIPs on this entire earth that acknowledged Jesus Christ at his birth, around his birth, were Persians. Nobody went the short 10 miles from Jerusalem. No priests of the Kohan. So, see, that's how divorced from reality all these people. Here's Magi, 500 miles away. They figure this out. They read the signs right. They figure it out. And they make the trip. And so you have these goofy manger scenes with the Magi there and Bill Clinton and all the kind of stuff they put around. Santa Claus. Oh, yeah, that's a great one. Santa Claus is bowing down. That sanctifies that. Well, that's good. Yeah. Are people like children or what? You know, and children, when I say children, and that's true of all children, they don't have discernment. That's why we protect minors. And they're easily fooled and fed the wrong stuff. They know this about children. It's kind of like an abuse of minors to tell them lies. Why would you tell your own child who you love, why would you tell them a lie? Well, they'll grow up and grow out of it. Sure they will. People overcome a lot of things. A lot of abusive stuff. But there's no excuse for that. And the fundies are all out there. And, you know, they'll still push the Santa Claus thing. Somebody said one of the Christian schools, they hear that some preacher got up there and he's, you know, some of these, you know, he just, anyway, he kept saying, Jesus is real. Jesus is real. Not like Santa Claus. That place just went dead quiet. You could have heard a needle hit. It's like, oops, I stepped over that line. So he starts backpedaling. Because all the grandmothers and all the parents and everybody's out there and they've been telling Johnny and Susie that there's a red guy up in a red suit, a fat guy coming down in a sleigh. And if you've been naughty or nice, you're going to get gifts or not. So behave your little selves. You know, and he's all knowing. He knows when you're awake and asleep. Knows if you've been naughty or nice, so for goodness sake, you know that junk. The junk that's put out there today. This is the devil's world. We will not celebrate Christmas in the millennium. We won't have even Europeans, because somebody said, I went to Europe, and the Europeans said, you Americans are crazy. Why? The way you shop for Christmas, we just get a gift or two. You people are like going nuts. And well, that fits Babylon, commercial Babylon, with its love of the stuff. That's our world. You know, at first, things are painful, but once you get lined out with this, it's liberating. I don't have to do this crap anymore. To impress anybody? It's certainly impressing God, so why would I want to be doing this? And just drive past it. The truth sets you free of so much stuff. If you'll let it. But you got to let it. All of us have grown spiritually, so we can let this go. You don't have to spend $800 to put lights all over your house. Like you'll make a statement. I make a statement. Mine's dark. I do like to turn the outside lights on. I've always have. I don't like, but anyway, that's it. That's it. I grew up having this conflict between Jesus and Santa Claus. But nobody said much about Jesus. So, and that's where I got the goodies. So what's the deal? I'm a kid. I don't have any discernment. As I got a little bit older, pushing 8 and 9 and 10, I'm thinking, how does he get down chimneys? And how can he touch all of us at once? Or in a short period of time? This is stupid. See, it's like a light bulb goes on in your head. This is stupid. Okay, it's over. Gig is up. I reasoned this out. It's not possible for anybody on any kind of a craft to eat all those cookies and drink all that milk and come down all these fucking chippies. My parents would eat the cookies and there'd be little crumbs on the plate. Yeah, you have some kind of whatever cookies and you just a little crumbs on a plate and the milk's gone and sitting out there. Huh. Because I'm a kid, I can't reason. I don't have reasoning skills. Now, some are better than others, okay? But I don't have any reasoning skills. What it boils down to is, do you like to be lied to about anything? Well, apparently people like make-believe. We wouldn't have idolatry all over this earth if people didn't like make-believe and elaborate stories about the gods and the things. And who are the fools that crank this stuff up? And all these people are told all these legends and stories and everything. And, oh, yeah, this is great. And we do the same damn thing today with science. We do it with religion. We do it with science. We got bad science and good science. I guess you knew that. And it's promoted all over the place. I don't like being lied to. I pray the Lord will deliver me from lies and liars who are proliferating in the last days. And by the way, like these con men, the really good ones, they're good at it. I got to give them that. They're very clever. And they're very good at it. And the environment is the devil's world where we're not going to promote the truth about that scientific principle. My God, we do that, then it points to God and we're in trouble. We're about denying God. We won't say it that way, but that's what we're doing. We're in Satan's army and we're promoting this stuff. We got a big fat degree and a really nice job and all the rest of it, and we're not going to jump up and say this is all crap. This part of it. See, that's where the confusion comes in, because you got the good and you got the bad running side by side. You got to learn to distinguish between them. That's what they taught me. So I don't know what you were taught. Well, I know what you were taught. In India, I read an article. The Indian government banned the teaching of evolution. Ban it from all the lower school, all the way up to college level. India. Idolatry capital of the world. They ban it. I don't know what the motivations were. Of course, it got one hell of an uproar. You step on any of their toes about this stuff? Like this guy that's on the OU regent board or whatever he is, got up and lambasted homosexuality? So what we're in today is all morals are relative. He says, the next thing we'll be adopting, I'm interpreting a little bit, I take a little liberty of that, but the next thing was, the next step down the road is to justify pedophilia. Why not? You've justified LGBT, and you're saying, oh, this is A-OK, what's next? Way back in the day, this was wrong, right? In 1973, the American Psychiatric Association declared that homosexuality was no longer abnormal. It's normal. Now, we got to convince all these idiots out there in America that it's normal. And we got a TV, and we got all these things. We're going to put pressure on them, and we're going to get them all lined out so they accept same-sex marriage, all the stuff. So if the devil's involved in this, and he is... Then what's next? What's next? We're just machines, biological ones. We're just machines, and we'll determine what's real and what's not, and everything's relative and up for grabs. You know where that takes people to the ultimate level? Anarchy. Anarchy. Perfect. Satan loves that. You've got to understand how bad he really is. It's beyond your definition of bad. He's opposed to everything that God's put on this earth and all of his righteousness and every principle. That's why we're in this madhouse that we're in today. In these last days. Trying to get our crown. I haven't lost track of my subject here. Not completely. So you can come out of the darkness in your soul. You have to live in the world. You have to see it. You know, I was going to say poor Lot. He put himself there. So I can't feel that sorry for him. He went and lived in Sodom because that's where you can make a lot of money quick. Legally. He wasn't a criminal. He wasn't running some... No, legal money. The Sodom and Gomorrah crowd, these people were prosperous. They lived in a lush river valley. Read about it in Genesis. And they were rich, well-dressed. These people were prosperous, but they were involved in this horrendous vice. And it was just like... And Lot had to live there every day and be miserable and see all these faggots and everybody running around. He did. And it made him sick. But his love for money overruled his revulsion for these people, their lifestyle. And if it wasn't for Abraham, he would have been fried with the rest of them. Abraham stepped up and delivered his hide one more time, one last time. See, Abraham did it. He interceded with God. He kept interceding with God, intercessory prayer. God was testing Abraham in this area. Abraham passed the test. We'll get Lot out before the fire and brimstone comes crashing down out of heaven. You can come into my office sometime. I'll show you one of those sulfur balls that fell out of the sky. They're out there still buried in the ground. Sulfur has a magnesium component in it, and you light those things, and it burns really hot. It wasn't a volcano. It wasn't, you know, some natural phenomenon. It was supernatural. But Lot and his family had two angels that walked into Sodom. And Lot sits at Sodom, at the gates of Sodom. Why does Lot sit at the gates of Sodom? This is where all the business comes through. This is where you make your business contacts. Hand out your business card. Find out what they're doing, and maybe there's an angle here for you. One funny story had Lot went to Sodom because he was in the cattle business with Abraham, and then he broke loose from that, and he gave that up, and, as far as I know, and he went into Sodom and lived in the city. And one funny story has it that he went into the salt business, and he was a judge in Sodom. But he was oppressed every day by this because he heard continual stories of all the violence that was being done. It was raping men, and anybody who you're a male and you want to visit Sodom, you better think twice. And so these two, probably properly appearing angels, not lights and everything, just angels transform themselves. I don't know how they do this, into looking like a regular human. Beware lest you entertain an angel unawares. I've had people tell me stories. Credible people, not idiots. Credible people. That was too strange. That encounter I had with an angel. You have a guardian angel. He's with you all the time. Your little children have one. You have a guardian angel. Well, anyway, they appeared as men. Lot sees them, greets them, city gate, daytime. They're there for a mission and has to get Lot out of there. Lot says, you two men, you need to stay in my house. It is not safe on the streets after dark here. No, we'll stay out here. No, I insist. So the angels play along with him and they go stay in his house. And in the middle of the night, the queers are beating on his door. They want these two men. Fresh meat. And Lot's trying to reason with them. Yeah, Lot's out there trying to reason with them. The angel said, step aside. And they struck all these faggots with blindness. And they couldn't even find the door. They're all just suddenly blind. And the angels lead Lot, his wife, and two daughters out of Sodom. And it says, this judgment's coming. I need to take this. No. You want to live? Is that more precious to you than your stuff? We're going. Let's go. Now. Because they knew the time schedule. And it wasn't going to be relaxed because he's dragging his feet. So it's basically, they have him. We're going, buddy. We're out of here. We're escorting you out of here. And while you leave, when this thing hits, the one rule is, don't look back. The temptation? Don't look back. Keep your back to it. You will hear it. It'll be noisy. The smoke will go up. All of it. Don't look back. Now, can you follow instructions? Well, Lot's wife didn't. And she got caught in a piece of it and turned her into a pillar of salt. And that pillar probably still out there. That whole area, that whole environment was blighted. And now it's the Dead Sea, full of all kinds of chemicals, and it stinks down there to the high heaven of sulfur. You go to the Dead Sea. And of course, we got spas down there. Cleopatra went there to be in the spas because they got all these mineral baths and all this business. But anyway, Lot was delivered. You can only do so much for a reversionist. You can only do so much. And the next thing, you find him in a cave with his daughter getting drunk. And his daughters, their husbands, if they had, they weren't going. So they decide that they want to raise up seed of children. So they have sex with their father. How nice. And it forms two nations, Moab and Ammon. And that's why we have them in the Bible. God doesn't form nations out of people that have children. He did with that. God's plan is so unreal, unbelievable. It's phenomenal. So SG3 and the millennium, and we'll stop here because we're going to do the Lord's table. I went over. Oh, well. Let's get in our places and we'll do this.